2022 or Death Howler brought us Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. Now Death Howler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Howler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Howler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk.
Everyone, and welcome back to Death Howler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always, my co-host, La Urena. And this is a special presentation where we cover the, is it Leica or is it Leica? How do they pronounce that?
Ooh, that's a good question. I call it Leica.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's how I've heard it, too.
The Leica Animation Studios film, Paranorman, from 2012. Tagline, it's all fun and games until someone raises the dead.
I don't like it. I don't like it because, oh my God, like this, I don't know, the potential of what they could have actually come with, and I don't know if there's other taglines, but I think they had better potential considering what the film is about. And it is about raising the dead, but...
I don't know that there was any other taglines, but that's the main one that they had represented. Directed by Chris Butler and Sam Fell, written by Chris Butler, music by John Bryan, made on a budget of $60 million, it made $107 million.
Not bad for an animation, but not bad. It didn't triple.
Yeah.
It didn't even double.
It's not great, but I mean, it worked or whatever. And the studio was obviously doing fine. They made several movies after this, like Kubo and Box Trolls and all that stuff.
Look at 1 week of Coraline in the theaters, more than made back triple what this film did. It did so fucking good that they re-released it for Halloween, and they're talking about re-releasing it again, and I'm like, I don't care. That shit's amazing. Like, I love that. Clearly, we've reviewed it, so I love that movie, and I'm like, if you're going to keep making money off of that, fucking do it. I'm all for it.
Good for them. I mean, they figured out. I mean, they're also taking advantage of the fact that the cinemas really don't have much to, claim anything, or, you know, as far as big movies at the moment.
Nope. And the merch that you get at these places, I'm loving it. I'm really loving the merch that they release. It's not great, but it's cool.
When Terrifier 3 ends up beating out Joker 2, you know that the movie theaters are in trouble. Although, kudos to Terrifier 3 for, you know, making so much fucking money that series will probably never end now. So
it'll probably never end, or it's just going to be one of those. He has made it into, like, people were talking about, like, he is one of the top.
He's one of the slasher icons now. Yeah. He's officially made it. He's up there with Freddy, Jason, you know, Michael. He's you know, Chucky, he's up there now. He finally made it.
Yay! Good job, Art. You did it. You did it, Art.
Not the time to review that movie, so moving on.
Yes.
Principal players, Cody Smith McPhee plays Norman Babcock, who is the psychic protagonist of the movie. He can see dead people, just like Haley Joel Osment.
He can.
Which is the interesting twist in this movie. If you can see and speak to the dead, can you speak to zombies? That's a good question.
Yeah, okay.
He was in the movie Let Me In.
Why does that sound so familiar?
We're going to be covering that during vampire season.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Oh, you have to ask permission.
Sure that, I'm pretty sure that's the American version of Let the Right One In or something like that. Okay. Anyways. The Road, which is one of the most depressing apocalyptic stories that a person could ever read. And the movie is along the same lines. And he was in X-Men Apocalypse. So there you go. He's been several things.
Nice.
Tucker Albrizzi plays Neil, the fat redheaded sidekick friend, because you need a little fat redhead kid in a movie.
And he wasn't a meanie.
No, he wasn't.
He was a good one.
I was thinking about, because I follow him on TikTok, the little fat redheaded kid that was in the Sandlot. Uh-huh. He met up with all the guys from the Sandlot convention and was like tricking them and like giving them kisses on the cheek or whatever. I guess he did that in the Sandlot movie, and none of them appreciated it because, you know, obviously it's an invasion of personal space.
Oh,
but
yes.
I was just thinking of his character. He's not a meanie necessarily, but he is kind of a jerk in the Sandlot, that redheaded kid. So there you go. Anna Kendrick plays Courtney Babcock, which is Norman's ditzy sis.
Who is sporting a badunk on her.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that girl's got ass.
She don't have much up front, but she does have everything in the back. So she was in Pitch Perfect, obviously, the whole trilogy, main character. She was in Scott Pilgrim, played his sister in that. And, of course, we've already covered Life After Beth, which she was in.
Nice.
She played the girlfriend that was trying to replace Beth, but, you know.
Beth wasn't having it.
Beth wasn't having that. It's kind of funny because she isn't. I think she's real close friends with Aubrey Plaza because they're in a lot of stuff together.
Aubrey Plaza, she's like having a comeuppance, even though she always deserved it. But more and more people are discovering her, like old versions of her. I don't know what is most recent about her, and I'm loving it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I mean, I love Aubrey Plaza. It's just the only thing that aggravates me is she had to weigh in on political stuff after the whole, what is it, Puerto Rico is a garbage, is made out of garbage or whatever. She had to step in there and say that her, what's the Spanish term for your, or Mexican term for like grandma, like what is, you know.
Abuelita.
Yeah, like she said that it's like, oh my, you know, whatever would have been
mi
like.
Mi abuelita.
Yeah, would have been very upset at hearing this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, the kind of humor that she does, she should be more forgiving of other humor is just my opinion. But anyways, Casey Affleck plays Mitch, who is Neil's older brother. Turns out he's gay, though. I mean, he's such a twist. He's very well built. And, I mean, looks like he should be the heartthrob of the movie, but he don't like women. At all.
You know, isn't that just how it goes? Some of the best looking men, the cleanest, most put together, like to a T, and then you're like, oh, he's swinging for the other team. And it's like, right on, so am I, swinging for the guys. Like, teach me the ways.
It's fine for the rest of us guys, because, I mean, somebody looks like that takes them out of the equation, so we got a chance. There you go. He was in the assassination of Jesse James by that coward Robert Ford or whatever is the long name of that movie.
TLDR.
It's actually pretty good, but it's too long didn't read. And he was recently in Oppenheimer, very big movie, and then A Ghost Story, which is it's one of those A24 style films where like he literally plays like the kind of ghost that wears a sheet over him. But he, like, when he dies, he just basically sits there and, like, watches his girlfriend, like, live with, or his fiance or wife or whatever she is, live without him, like, and he can't interact with her and all that. And it's one of those, it's not scary. It's more like, you know, depressing, just like, you know, it's That's A24. That's the shit they do. So anyways, Christopher Mintz Plaza, or I think that's how he says his name, plays Alvin, who's the dipshit bully in this, which is really weird considering we're talking about McLovin, basically.
I didn't realize it was McLovin.
it is. And I actually watched another movie with him in it for Halloween, which is the Fright Night remake from 2011, nice, where he plays Evil Ed.
Okay.
He was also the bad guy in Kick-Ass and, of course, McLovin from Superbad. Leslie Mann plays Sandra Babcock, which is Norman's mother. She was in Knocked Up, This Is 40, and The 40-Year-Old Virgin. And if you can't remember the character she was, whenever Steve Carell's going on all the dates with the different women, she's the one that gets super drunk and then vomits all over him in the car while she's drunk driving. Let's get some
motherfucking French toast.
Leslie Mann is like, I mean, she there for a hot minute. She was super hot. Like, I mean, not just in like, you know, in all the movies she's in, because obviously her husband's the one that made all of them. But I mean, she's actually really attractive there for, and then I don't know, she's still fine. But like, there was a minute there where she was like really pretty, you know,
you get to see during her all these full movies. Frontal in This Is 40 when she has a shit attack. Oh, wait, no, it's not This Is 40. It's another one where the bodies of the spell, not the bodies, but the mindset of two guys get swapped. And so it's like they're friends. And so the physical appearance of one has to stay with Leslie Mann because he's technically married to her.
You're talking about the one with the from Arrested Development. He played the main character in that, but yet he was in also Horrible Bosses. He's one of them that swaps out or whatever.
Yes, and
Jason Bateman. I can't remember it. What's that?
Is it Jason Bateman?
Jason Bateman, yeah. I always forget his last name. I don't know why, but yes. He's one of them, and then I can't remember who the other person is that he swaps with in that movie. I remember that.
Yeah, all I know is that they swap. It's his dream to have always slept with her, but his friend is like, please don't sleep with my wife, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. He thinks it's going to happen. He's like, oh, fuck, here it is. She's naked. She walks past. You can see tits. You can see vagina. You can see everything. And then she sits on the toilet and she just fucking blows it up right in front. And that's that, you know, I don't want to say that's marriage because I don't like intentionally do that. But, you know, it happens when you've been together for so long.
It is marriage when it's been that many years on. The love is gone at that point, or at least the you know, like, let's be timid part of love, and then it's just whatever.
I was
about
to say, the love is there. It's just the modesty is gone.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, when you talk about somebody blowing up a toilet, I still think about, oh, I hated this just because the girls were so attractive. And then, of course, just like the characters in the movie got ruined for them. Harold and Kumar go to White Castle. They're behind or next in the stalls next to these two, like, I believe they're Indian ladies or whatever. And they're just like, they're blowing those toilets up and it just ruins every bit of hotness about them. And it's just like, okay.
Battleships.
Yeah, battle shits. That's what they're playing.
It's The Change Up, and it looks like it's with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Another one of those Freaky Friday ripoffs,
yes,
though.
Like, yes,
I mean, there's 100%. So many of those. Jeff Garland plays Perry Babcock, which is Norman's father, primarily known by a lot of people for Curb Your Enthusiasm. He was also in Safety Not Guaranteed with Aubrey Plaza. And Wally, he plays like the captain at the end of the movie.
I was just going to ask you, the captain of the ship, that kind of gets taken over because I forget what the name of the robot was that wouldn't let him...
It was the cleanup robot that was like, this is not protocol. You're not supposed to ever go back to Earth or whatever because they told us otherwise. And John Goodman plays Mr. Pendergast, which is Norman's psychic uncle. And of course, John Goodman, Roseanne, I mean, Don Connor, I mean, that's, or Dan Connor.
Yeah.
That's what he was primarily known for. 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is a damn fucking good movie. And then Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, where he plays the preacher who is the Cyclops that, you know, kills the horny toad, as it were. Synopsis. Norman has a fairly typical life for a kid. He goes to school, doesn't get along with his big sis, and he sees and talks to spirits. This ability to speak to the dead has caused Norman to be an outsider, even amongst his family. When his creepy uncle begins stalking Norman, he quickly finds out that his powers are inherited. A member of Norman's family has been responsible for preventing the town from falling under an ancient witch's curse that happens every Halloween. When Norman fails to prevent said curse, the bodies of the dead rise and sheer chaos ensues. You don't become a hero by being normal. That's the other tagline.
That has to be. I like that one way better. That one's way better because he's paranormal, you know?
Yeah. Quotes from the movie. Norman Badcock: Dad says I'm not supposed to talk to you anymore, Grandma. And then, of course, Grandma responds back, Jackass, if I were a poltergeist, I'd throw something at his head. And then Norman says, I like to be alone. And then Neil says, so do I. Let's do it together, because he's kind of a dumbass.
Yeah. There was actually a really good quote, and it's like, it's okay to be afraid as long as you don't let that change who you are.
Yes.
Which is very, very, you get that, you don't get that from Coraline. The message is there, but it's underlying, where this is just like right there in your face. Like, I'm telling you right now, you're going to be scared. Just don't let it change who the fuck you are.
That, and also accepting who you are, even if you're an outsider. That's the main, because the whole point, I mean, even with the quote unquote witch at the end of it, I mean, her whole thing was, is that she was misunderstood and, you know, and couldn't communicate, or, you know, couldn't be accepted by her community, and that made her into a villain, and it just took somebody recognizing that and trying to be friends with her to kind of soothe it over.
Yeah.
Visually, I mean, I love the animation style of this movie. I mean, it's not Coraline, it's just different enough to be its own thing, but it's still like that, got that claymation look to it. And I like, and especially at the beginning of the movie where they're doing that fake zombie intro or whatever, like a fake grindhouse zombie movie that Norman's watching with his dead grandma. Like, I love the way that they did that, because it's even got like the grain and all that, like an old movie where it looks like it's, you know.
The dragging soundtrack a little bit, if you will, as if it were kind of worn.
Then they, the look of the town has got like, I mean, and the community's got that Halloween vibe to it. So it's a good Halloween movie, because it's got that fall look to it.
Yeah, because I forget, this is a Blythe Hollow, is Massachusetts is where this is placed. It's 100% Salem, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Even the shops that they were walking past, the street he was on, I was like, oh, this is Salem.
And they even have, like, the Hocus Pocus moment where the school's, like, trying to put on a play about the witch being hung, and then he sees the actual past and all that. I mean, it's got a lot of, like, the from Halloween, witches, ghosts, you know, zombies or whatever. There's a lot mixed in there.
A spooky tale, season.
Yeah, the only thing is that people... I mean, it's presented as a zombie movie, so you're like, okay, the undead. But then the twist is the zombies are actually the misunderstood, you know, people who are getting attacked by the people, because everybody knows what a zombie is, and they're not having it. And the zombies just want to go back to being dead. That's their whole purpose. They don't want to be moving around.
But the zombies were also a product of... Basically, they were the ones who did the misunderstanding back in the day. So this was their curse.
That was the curse from the little girl that was basically, it's hinted at that maybe she was a relative of Norman's.
Yes, because same last name.
She had the same abilities he did. Yeah,
same ability, same last name. So she's a distant relative for sure.
And, and that's kind of like that kind of where the kids theme comes in the movie, where it's just basically, you know, accepting others for their eccentricities and looking at them and, you know, and accepting their gifts or whatever, and because even his own family has to come to terms with that. It's just like at the end of the movie, his dad, you know, tries to make peace with it by coming in there where Norman says that the grandma's at and says, is she here? And then he says, you know, he tries to have them communicate between the two of them or whatever, so that he, you know, that's his way of accepting Norman and also he didn't have a good relationship with his mom, so, or Norman's dad didn't, so that's their way of patching that up. So it's got a good little message there too.
Yeah.
Toward the end of the movie.
Absolutely.
The only thing about this movie is that, and I told you this off air, is that when it gets to the scene in the cemetery, when the dipshit bully mm-hmm. prevents Norman from reading the book, which is, he thinks that he's reading like some kind of ancient spell book or whatever, but all it is literally a fairy tale to put the little girl back to sleep for another year. But whenever he gets prevented from doing that, when the zombies rise up, till the zombies are in the town getting attacked by the people in the town, I kind of just like zone out in this movie, and I don't know why. I mean, it's not like it's boring or anything. It's just I've seen it enough times now that's like the one moment where I'm like, I'm going to take a little nappy nap, and I'll wake back up whenever it gets, you know, to the action again.
I told you, you're dying, and then you come back to life. You rise from the dead at another point of the movie.
Yeah, but I don't know if that... I mean... I think it's more, it's not necessarily that I'm bored with a movie. I think it's more being familiar with a movie to the point where I'm just like, I know what happens. I can accept, because I started doing that a little bit with Trick or Treat this year. And I hate that because I love every little minor story in that movie. But like around the time that the zombie kids are rising up from the water, from the school bus part of it, until the part where the little witch girl sees Sam and like waves at him, you know, as she's walking away, I got a little sleepy in that part, and I'm like, I don't like getting old because I don't like doing this, but yeah, that's what I'm doing now.
It happens. We are getting older, and it actually, I do the same thing with one of my favorite movies ever, Nightmare Before Christmas. I've done it with Coraline, too. It's just, okay, the thing about Nightmare Before Christmas and Coraline is some of the music can be so soothing, even when it's kind of, you know, turning darker, and I'm used to it. I watched it a million times. I struggled in theater when we were watching it in 3D.
Nightmare, if there's any part of that I get that same feeling, it's Christmas stuff, just because I don't really care about the Christmas stuff that much, especially toward the end where he's like dropping the gifts off to all the kids and stuff. When he starts doing that to the point where he's getting shot at, That's the part where I can kind of just like zone out mentally, because I'm like, yeah, I don't. And then it gets back to Halloween Town, and I'm like, that's, or, you know, or whatever it's called.
Yay.
And that's what, you know, that's where I'm invested again. Whenever he gets blasted back down into the cemetery and he goes through the mausoleum back into his world, I'm like, now we're back to the good part, you know?
Do you think that what am I trying to say? Like, I don't know when I did not become a fan of Christmas. Like, I used to like it when I was a kid, and it has nothing to do with the magic of it. I didn't have a Christmas that was ruined or anything like that I can recall, unless it was so traumatic I forgot. But I'm just, I like Christmas. I love doing it for my kids. I like with the family and everything, but I'm just not a fan. Why am I so dark?
I don't know what to tell you, because, see, for me, I've got at least an excuse. We celebrated Christmas the way that most people do it, like once or twice that I can really remember as a kid. And then every year after that, it was more of a formality. It was just like, we didn't even wait until Christmas to open up our gifts. Like, because it's partially because I think, and this is a sad, you know, tangent or whatever, but my dad was married previously to my mom, and he was really and his previous wife was really into Christmas, but she died of lupus, and I guess something snapped there, and like he just didn't celebrate it. Okay. So like, I mean, he put the tree up and all that, but it was not something that he went gung-ho about, and it passed on to me. And like, I like it for the break in seasonal depression that it gives with all the lights and everything, But other than that, like, I'm just like, all right. I mean, the reason for the season is more religious based, and I can care less about this jolly fat man that's going around with gifts. So let's get on with it, you know?
Oh my God. You know, it makes sense. And also, 'tis not the reason for the season, because as you and I both discussed, we both know that all points indicate Jesus was born in the summer.
or at the very least, like September. Yeah. Like it's somewhere in that range. August, September, somewhere in that range. Yes.
Yeah, September, or excuse me, summer slash fall, possibly. Maybe Jesus was a fall. Maybe, you know, maybe Halloween is more, you know.
Halloween is closer to his birthday than December is. We're basically, I mean, we're celebrating Saturnalia if anybody actually looks into what you're celebrating, which is fine. Like I said, people need something to break up seasonal depression that happens in December when the days are at their, you know, like darkest. So it's a good thing, but it's just like, as far as the movies and everything else, like I'm just, I like them, but they're not like Halloween, like at all for me at, I mean, whatsoever. Even as a kid, like Halloween was so special versus like Halloween, like, or I mean, versus Christmas, because like you dressed up, you went, I went to all the trick or treating, like it was a night that, you know, and then I got home, had all the Halloween specials on, I was eating my candy, and I'm just like, that's what I remember. And then for Christmas, it's like, hey, it's like 2 weeks from here, can I open up my gift? All right, I got a Game Boy, you know, that's that, that was Christmas for me. So that's the reason I don't, you know.
No, I get it. I get it. We're trying to do Creepmas this year. Merry Creepmas. That's a big thing right now. I've been doing it forever. I've been doing it. Shit, we have a, in fact, I'm looking at it right now. When, before my daughter was even born, and she's going to be 17, we took a Christmas tree. We spray painted it black. We made it a Nightmare Before Christmas tree. You can buy that now. But that wasn't a thing 17 years ago. So we had to make one.
They're definitely because, they're definitely because of Nightmare Before Christmas combining the two of them now, which is not bad. I mean, for horror freaks like us that do appreciate, because I focus more on those movies now, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, I go out of my way to find movies that are Christmassy, but like, you know, that most people wouldn't consider a Christmas movie.
Oh, yeah.
Gremlins, you know. Die Hard, you can debate me all day, it's a Christmas movie.
I'm not going to debate you on that until I see it, so.
But there's several people that fight me on that. But, I mean, Krampus, like movies like that, I go, they're the ones that I focus on now because, and then I'll watch one time, you know, the staples, you know, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, Home Alone 1 and 2, you know, all the stuff like that. I mean, I do like the, and, you know, watch those movies at least once during the season, just get a feel for it. But I'm not like as gung-ho about that stuff as I'm about, you know, Halloween movies.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And
all that to say, get,
oh, go ahead.
All that to say, getting back to this movie is just that it, this one definitely has the Halloween vibe to it. And it's more of that season. And that's the reason we, you know, we were hoping to get to it before, you know, Halloween actually ended. But, life happens, folks. So life happens.
You know what? I'll take it. It's before Thanksgiving. It's a nice, good transition film, if you will.
It is still fall, so it does work.
Yes.
Which, speaking of that, I'm glad there's more Thanksgiving horror films that are being made, like Thanksgiving from Eli Roth. That we need more of those movies to watch during Thanksgiving.
Yes.
To continue on spooky season. What about, I mean, we talked about the story. What about the acting in this movie? Did you feel like the voice actors were pretty good for, I mean, the most part?
I thought they were amazing because they were all so flipping different. I mean, you had, the mom was a typical mom, you know, good, you know, loving mom. The dad is your typical gruffy dad that's just trying to get by in life and support the family. Total typical teenage daughter, if you will. I love Casey Affleck's character because he was so fucking dumb. Like, he's a big old meathead. And then Norman,
Neil's pretty dumb, too. That whole family's kind of dumb.
Yeah, that's true. Neil's just, he's just a good, kind kid, and he's there for the ride, and I just love how supportive he was. And Norman is just so, like, down, depressed, and, like, to himself because he's like, I don't want to weird anybody out, you know?
Yeah, there's been a lot of like fans of like a studios that would have liked to have seen like Coraline and Norman like meet up in a movie just because they do have similar vibes as far as like main characters. I don't know how you feel about that, but I think that would have been an interesting, you know, like of course, Coraline's based upon a character that was in a book. So Neil Gaiman probably, or Gaiman, however he says his name, would probably not have approved of that. But it would have been an interesting movie.
It would have been nice. I've heard rumors that it might include Paranorman, but I know for a fact there's a movie that, it's coming up. It's a new Laika movie film, and for sure it's going to involve at minimum the forest that surrounds the Pink Palace and may have the Pink Palace in it from Coraline.
That's interesting. What I was going to say on my side of it, and I'm looking up at the see if there's a new movie. Oh, Wildwood's the name of it.
Wildwood, I got you.
That's
yes.
The new one that's coming out.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what I was looking up. That's the reason I was a little committal to that statement. That actually looks pretty interesting, to be honest. The voice acting is good in this one. I think they chose good actors because Jeff Garland, I mean, even though he always sounds like himself, his voice like is very emotive. He's also in that show, about the 80s on ABC, The Goldbergs. He plays like the dad on The Goldbergs. He's got the same vibe, you know, he's like his always at top volume and, you know, kind of high pitched or whatever. John Goodman plays, you know, does a good job as the gruff, you know, character he's playing.
Yeah.
I just, the worst thing the thing that bothers me about a lot of these movies, though, is I don't understand why they don't just hire voice actors, because voice actors are so good at their jobs.
Yeah.
And it's a different skill set than regular actors.
It is, but like,
I
think we can agree that Laika's done very well, not necessarily hiring voice actors. Well,
Laika's done well, but I think they would have done so much. I mean, I think they could have done so much better if they would have actually hired voice actors for a lot of their movies, just because, like I said, they get what they need out of the regular actors, but it's like voice actors know, I mean, that they have to sell everything based upon their voice and, like, you know, and sell it that way, as opposed to, I mean, regular actors are trained to do everything from their facial expressions to their body stances. And so, like one of the recent trends that I don't like whatsoever is hiring, what's his name? Chris,
Pratt,
the one that was Pratt hiring. Cause I was thinking Helmsworth. I could not get that name in my head. Chris Pratt to do anything, related to like animated movies. And I'm just like, why are you doing this? I mean, I like him as an actor, but he is not a good voice actor. Like,
yeah.
He just does not sell the characters he's doing.
I don't know. I don't fully agree with you, but I do agree with you because I have seen what voice actors can do. Obviously, we talk about Tara Strong frequently. I'm so beyond impressed how amazing she is. I've seen other voice actors on TikTok. So I agree with you, but I don't, because I do love... Sometimes I love recognizing a character that's, you know, or an actor that's doing a voiceover, if you will.
You a good voice actor like John DiMaggio, who plays Bender and also plays like the voice of the dog in Adventure Time and all that stuff. And you give them an animated movie or something like that, they're gonna make that character memorable. I mean, way more than like a regular actor would. I'm sorry, they just do.
I do agree with that. I also have to throw in, so I have mentioned before, my hubby agrees with you that Die Hard is a Christmas film. But one of my other friends just happened to message me while we're recording here. And I was like, hey, quick question. You're a guy. Is Die Hard a Christmas film? No hesitation. Yes. No hesitation.
So let's put this to bed. I mean, this is all about tangents this episode, and people can tune out if they need to. The thing is that what makes a Christmas movie? It's the songs. It's the decorations. I mean, within the movie that hints that season, Christmas lights, trees, whatever. Also, it's the theme of the movie. It's usually like families coming back together. It's about, you know, somebody recognizing that they, you know, were not, I mean, they didn't appreciate, you know, their family or their loved ones, and realizing by the end of the movie that, you know, either they themselves were, you know, are worthy of, you know, of basically being loved, or they're, or they recognize that, you know, they're, that family is more important than what they were, you know, thinking about.
Krampus.
Die Hard is literally about a separated family with exactly. Die Hard is literally about an a cop from New York who is coming to visit his wife and his kids who have separated and gone to California, and through the course of the film, that she realizes his wife Holly, who even she even goes by her old name. It's not McClane anymore. It's the Gennaro is what she goes by. She learns through the course of that film that man was willing to sacrifice to save her life and that of her kids, and why, and they come back together as a family. That is a Christmas film. I'm sorry. It is. You can throw all the action in there, but the family gets reunited by the end of the movie.
There was no debate from me. I have not seen it. I have to watch it. Yes, I have three men in my life telling me I need to watch it, and I'm sure all the fans would agree too. So, yes, I will be watching it likely this Christmas. We are not allowed to have Christmas in this house right now. My daughter has put a foot down. She is serious. She is angry. She is using her teenage angst, no Christmas until after Thanksgiving. And I respect the fuck out of that.
That's a good way to look at life. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Thanksgiving deserves to be its own thing before Christmas.
It does. She is also not over Halloween, so there's that. Okay, back to Coraline. Well, not Coraline. Oh, that's my God.
Back to Paranorman.
Paranorman.
So regardless of the debate about voice acting, I really do think that they bring a special skill set that makes them, you know, the characters stand out better. But the music in this movie is kind of dates it a little bit, because it does have a little bit of that specific time periods, like folk pop music or whatever, like Little Ghost at the end of the movie that plays. It's got a little bit of that, although the orchestra music throughout the movie is, you know, timeless and it works for what it is. But the little bits of music, like Little Ghost at the end of it, just kind of like, you know, ties it into like the specific time period, you know, the 2000s or whatever when it came out. So
yeah, that's, I mean, I, you know who did that too? I think Frankenweenie kind of did that a little bit, but not a ton.
Yeah.
The orchestrated music was just so much better, but it was no Nightmare Before Christmas and it was no Coraline. So, which is sad because this movie is pretty damn good. It just, to me, without even rating it yet, doesn't really hold a candle to those two. But thankfully, we're not comparing this movie to those. But that's just me personally saying that.
We're not comparing, but you're right. Like, the music in those movies makes those movies way better.
It does. It really does. And we've said that. Sometimes no music makes the movie good.
Even the orchestra music in Coraline is better, to be perfectly honest. Because 100. I mean, which there's orchestra music in Nightmare Before Christmas. I'm just saying, like, the little, like, Coraline's theme is like, I mean, you could sit there and do, you know, like that whole thing stands out way more than anything in this movie. Like, it, I mean, it's, you know, it really, when you hear Coraline's music, you think Coraline. This movie doesn't have any of that. Mm-mm. You know, really.
I couldn't hear one song and be like, that's Paranorman.
Yeah, if you played, except for Little Ghost, that's the only one that you could play, and I'd be like, all right, stand a Paranorman, you know.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, it was fair. We'll just leave it at fair.
Yeah. Do you want to go into trivia before we get into reviewing it?
Yes.
So animating the cheesy horror film that Norman is watching at the start of the movie was reportedly very difficult for the filmmakers, as they had to intentionally make a bad film, including bad camera angles, poor focus, bad acting, etc., while still working in the very technically demanding confines of stop-motion animation. So they're making a very technical, very, you know, exacting type of, you know, movie where they're anytime that you work in animation, your whole is and this is my favorite thing from the anime director that did Perfect Blue. He says if you're making an animated movie, there should be nothing in that movie that is not, you know, part of the, or that's supposed to be in the movie. He said when you're making regular movies, like, you get random like mistakes. Like, you know, there might be like an explosion in the background because, you know, something went off, and you can throw that in there. For instance, Terrifier, the original Terrifier movie, there's an ambulance that goes by the two main actresses while they're in the car, like freaking out because they just saw Art for the first time. And that was a real ambulance. It just happened to work perfectly for the movie because it, you know, played into it. But when you're making an animated movie, you decide what the rules are, what's in the shots. You decide everything. So for the director of Perfect Blue, there should be nothing in an animated movie that is not supposed to be there as part of the art. So for them, they're making a bad movie. They've got to put this stuff in there when that's not really what you do with an animated movie.
I want to know who the voice actress was in the bad movie, the B film, if you will, at the beginning, that was screaming nonstop and had to stop and restart screaming again because the zombie was so slow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because it's just slowly coming toward the camera. It's funny, too, because I feel like that bad zombie movie that they're watching the beginning of, it's almost like a combination of Night of the Living Dead and one of those Italian zombie movies that we're getting ready to cover.
Oh, God. Definitely. 100%.
I mean, it's like right there in between the two of them.
It's got like Return of the Living Dead, maybe, and one of the Lucio Fulci films.
Yeah, it's when we get into that, it's definitely got some Lucio Fulci influence to it, for sure. There is an after-credit scene showing in time-lapse the design and construction on a workbench of the Norman character, which ends Norman coming to life as if waking up from sleep and leaving the scene.
That's fucking so badass.
There you go on that. During the last few weeks leading up to the film's release, Leica sent 49 packages to 49 people, including Neil Gaiman and Kevin Smith, and Jenny, the blog S. Lawson. Each package consisted of a wooden crate from Blythe Hollow full of grave dirt, which recipients had to dig through to unearth a coffin. Inside the coffin was one of the seven cursed zombies, complete with a background information and name. I wished I could have been one of the people that got that. That sounds fucking cool.
Well, it sounds like important people got it, and we are not important, unfortunately. Not yet. But yeah, Leica, we are looking for sponsors. If you want to sponsor our podcast, because we've reviewed you a few times, holler.
Yeah, and I don't think that I would want to smoke enough dope that I just cry all the time like Kevin Smith, but I mean, I feel like I could say as much about your movie as he probably did, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that. The film company, Leica, used 3D printers to generate all the different faces needed for the characters, except the zombies, which had mechanical faces with silicone skins.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's kind of cool. A vending machine is shown to sell Cujos.
Fuck!
Cujohs, a direct reference to Cujo. It even has a dog as a logo.
I totally missed that because I just watched the guy buying barbecue bits or something is what it was called. That's the name of the chip. The guy that was buying potato chips that he, it was taking forever and he was screaming. He ran away and then he came back for his chips. That is 100% me. I would do that. I would be screaming, waiting for my snack. I'd run away, and then I'd come back and grab my snack.
When bad animals go bad, mm-hmm. There's always part of me wants to save Stephen King's stuff for like one, you know, like his own season. But I feel like Cujo is the poster child for when bad animals go bad.
Cujo
like,
has I mean, to be
it
the
is
opener.
The movie outside of. Are we going to cover Old Yeller during that season? Because, damn, that's a horrible movie to try to rewatch. Not because it's old, because that movie traumatized me as a child.
It traumatized everybody, but Old Yeller, that's not really a horror film. It is a bad animal, I will give you that.
Is it? Is it not a horror movie? Did it not traumatize a bunch of kids?
If you want that kind of torture in your life, we can watch Old Yeller. I'm letting you know right now, I am already crying thinking about it.
I mean, you put you put Old Yeller right up there with the scene from Neverending Story where he loses his horse, and you just described how my childhood got destroyed. I mean,
oh my God, kids today, all these emotional kids and need safe space kids, they have no fucking idea. They could never survive some of the movies we survived.
And then we got Bambi's mom getting killed. That was a whole other thing that we got as a kid.
Disney cartoon. You know, great. Oh yeah, big time. I mean, I guess the older, well, not older, but like not my kids, but slightly older than my kids, they had The Lion King, so they got to fucking see their dad just fall off a cliff and die.
Yeah, Mufasa gets killed.
Yeah.
You know, if you watch that movie closely, Scar actually has the skull of Mufasa in his lair.
That's what I've heard. And he uses it as a puppet, doesn't he? That's really fucked up.
Yes.
It's metal as fuck.
The story is set in the town of Blythe Hollow. His name is a mashup of two other ghost stories, Noel Coward's Blythe Spirit and Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
I love that so much.
So there you go. The bathroom scene where Mr. Pendergast appears out of the toilet took over a year to animate from beginning to end. It was the work of one animator to do that. That 1 year to make one little scene in a movie, that just, oh my God, I would have died of you imagine being that guy, like every day, like just barely moving like a little bit of the claymation thing, snapping it, moving it, snapping. You do that for a solid year, basically.
I would lose my fucking mind.
Yeah, I don't. These people, they're insane. This is the final film of Elaine Stritch before her death on July 17th, 2014, who obviously plays does the voice for the grandma in the movie. The film was shot using Canon 5D Mark II DSLR cameras to generate the 3D effects. The camera was mounted on a special rig that would take one shot, then slide to a slightly different viewpoint to make another shot.
Hmm. Okay.
That works as far as making a 3D movie.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the movie, Norman is watching a scary movie. The actress is modeled after Jamie Lee Curtis in 1978's Halloween, while the plot is a spoof of Night of the Living Dead, although I would throw in Lucio Fulci's movies in there because the way that the zombies just, like, you know, the people sit there and just wait for the zombie to attack them, that's way more Lucio Fulci, in my opion.
I wanted to say real quick,
what was you gonna say?
How was the actress in the beginning movie modeled after Jamie Lee Curtis? Maybe the face, but that ass, because she also had cheeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they wanted to give Jamie Lee a badonkadonk, I guess. You know, amp it up a little bit. Save for Judge Hopkins, the seven cursed zombies are not referred to by name, but did have names. The aforementioned Judge Hopkins, Eben Hardwick, Thaddeus Blackton, Lemuel Spaulding, Amelia Wilcott, Goody Temper, and Wild London. So there are probably Willie London. So there you go. Co-director Sam Fell mentioned that their introduction to Norman's family is an homage to Steven Spielberg's 80 films that always included their slightly dysfunctional families in a kitchen.
Oh, okay. I mean, it works.
Which is really true when you think about it, because that's how Poltergeist is. They're all in a kitchen as you're getting introduced to them.
Yeah.
The brand name seen on Mr. Pendergast underwear is Mr. Fell after co-director Sam Fell. Mitch wears Mr. Butler underwear after co-director Chris Butler.
What so the they, hell?
They got their name on the underwear in the movie. Grandma's ghostly wardrobe was up for debate early on, but the final choice was ultimately inspired by Estelle Getty's tracksuit from The Golden Girls.
Oh, okay. I dig it.
Thank you for being a friend.
Shut up.
The chase scene was incredibly difficult. The chase scene was incredibly difficult for various reasons. If you think about the van racing down these roads, then the roads physically have to be built, said director Chris Butler. And we have it, and we had a road that was 70 feet long, I think. And that, of course, is flanked on either side by handmade trees. Handmade road and the van has to be animated by hand with all these characters inside of it. God, that would have been forever.
It's 70 so fucking tedious.
Feet. and they had to make all the trees. I mean, it makes you appreciate the work that goes into it. And it's barely in the movie. It's like, blink and you'll miss it. Jeff Garland based his performance.
Hold on. Hold up. Wait a minute. What? Okay. Coraline took 7 years to produce and make. Do we have, did we mention yet how long this took, or is that coming up?
I don't know that it's in this.
Okay, I'm going to find it. You can continue, and then.
Okay. Jeff Garland based his performance of Perry on his best friend, Judd Apatow, which is Leslie Mann's, you know, husband, which is interesting.
Yeah.
The singular compromise the directors made in cutting the early variation of Mr. Pendergast's introduction was in cutting. The finished version shows him hacking and coughing as he reaches for some medicine, but the filmmakers originally had him reaching for a cigarette. They decided that would be frowned upon as it was a children's movie, and you don't do that in children's movies these days.
No.
That would make sense the way he has a bad heart, though, when he, you know. The scene where Norman visits Mr. Pendergast's house was meant as a complete haunted house experience, and the director, Chris Butler, notes that he was actually somewhat scared by the teddy bear with insects bursting from its mouth. Co-director Sam Fell describes the image as more Eastern European surrealist, disturbing kind of stuff.
I mean, considering what we're going to be recording next, yeah. We got a scene with insects.
Spiders, maybe? Yeah. When the directors first set out to design the chase scene, they brought in storyboard artist Martin Asbury for input. We wanted him because he worked on a bunch of live-action movies, and we had done a ton of chase sequences in Bond movies. And we thought that was a great approach to shooting this and just to go all out and see what we could achieve. Okay?
Okay.
Norman and Mitch never talked to one another in the movie.
Norman and Mitch. That's the dumb brother?
Yeah, the older brother. Okay. They never talk to one another.
Okay.
They talk through Neil, apparently, through most of the movie.
Ah, okay. Or through the sister, maybe.
The sister, yeah. The original mob scenes, both in script and storyboard forms, were determined to be a bit too heavy with their guns and real weapons, and they were deemed for being far from funny, so they had to tone them down.
Okay, I mean, I think the mob scene was fine. I don't think we needed guns, but I like how the gym teacher was like, "Kill him in the head!" And I was like, yes, finally, somebody gets it. This is a zombie film, kind of a zombie film. It's more of a zombie film than not, where they understand in the head.
Club them in the head, beat them, burn them. They, you know... They're all dead. They're all messed up, as the sheriff once said. The film is loaded with homage, including name references. We've got Clive Barker, Toby Hooper, and Day of the Dead's Bub and named reference in this. And visual ones, John Carpenter's Halloween, Sam Raimi's camera work from Evil Dead, and then, of course, Scooby-Doo. But there are also a handful of inside jokes. Two, for some explained reason, involved the director's name sewed into the underwear, as we mentioned before. And both directors claim they have seen no residuals from the product placement in the movie with their underwear names. Boo for them.
It was literally on the brand of the underwear.
Did you ever figure... Yeah, I mean, it's right in there. Did you ever figure out how long this took to make?
I sure did. Okay. Production of the stop-motion animature feature took place at Leica Studio in Hillsboro, Oregon, which, by the way, folks, there is a museum out there. It is mostly a Coraline museum, but I'm pretty sure they have other Leica stuff there, too. The film was in production for 3 years, with the animation stage of the production lasting about 2 years. Now, can you math that for me? Is that a total of 5 years, or was that 3 years total with 2 years of that being... the production. Because 3 years seems short considering Coraline. I would imagine that's
5 years total because...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think 5 years... 3 years is accurate. It had to have been five.
Okay, perfect. That's where I'm at with it, too.
All right, I'm going to go first with my rating on this because I think I've had you go several times in the last little bit first. So I'm going to probably put this at a 4 because I really do like watching this movie. But it's not – I don't know what I gave Coraline, but I'm pretty sure I gave it a 4.5 or above, maybe a 5, and it ain't Coraline.
It's not.
Unfortunately.
No. God, did I do – I really need to start rate. I mean, I am, by the way, keeping track of our scores. So I am doing it now. I've been horrible at that. I've not done it at all, actually. But I feel like I was, if I wasn't a 5, I was pretty fucking close to a 5. And you rated this.
I feel like you would have been, yeah.
Yeah. And you gave this, honestly, you rated this higher than I anticipated, considering you were telling me that you fall asleep. Falling asleep can be a comfort thing just as much as it can be a bored thing. So, I don't know. I'm not going to knock you for that one because I've done it too on movies that I absolutely love. It's just I've seen them a million times.
It's not that I don't like the movie. It's right in my wheelhouse. It's a zombie movie, first of all, favorite genre of movie. It's Halloween themed. Also love it, and it's got all the fall and everything else. Plus, I love the fact that it's even got like the a little bit of the Sixth Sense worked in there. So I like the concepts, and I think they did a good job with bringing them together. It's just one of those things where I think I've just seen it enough to where I'm just like, okay, I feel comfortable piecing out because I know what's happening in the movie, so I'm not missing anything.
Yeah. Okay. God, this is, I'm going to have to copy you. Do I give it? No, I don't. Do I? No. 4. It's a 4 for me because I can't even bring this close to Coraline at all. Honestly, mm-mm. I can't do it,
no.
But it's not for any lack. And we said we weren't going to compare to Coraline, and here we are. You know what? We're fucking guilty. Guilty as charged. Get the zombie judges.
Here's the thing. I'm not comparing it to Coraline in the sense of like one-to-one movie. I'm comparing it just my 4 comes straight from just like what I think the movie where it really falls at. I'm just saying that Coraline is a better movie. So the fact that it should be higher, if I didn't give it a higher rating, then I'm retroactively saying I gave it a 4.5 or better because Coraline is better. I mean, now there's your comparison. You can take me to, comparison jail or whatever, but I do think this is a 4 as far as a movie goes.
Yeah. Okay. So for me, why is it a 4 for me though, is what I need to come up with because the only thing I have is that it's the thing about it is the reason why it's not higher than a 4 is it's not scary. Coraline is fucking horrifying to some people. We love it.
Coraline has a lot more darkness to mm-hmm. it than this, yes.
100%. Where this is, and with Coraline, you can imagine the fear that she felt. Now, I'm not saying that I wouldn't feel a lot of fear being approached by zombies. That would be my worst fear, actually. So I'd probably handle it. Norman handled it way better than I would. These are kids that are having to be brave in the face of fear and evil, technically. And they have to make the right choice. This message was very loud and clear. It was so loud and clear, the grandma said it in one of her lines. Whereas in Coraline, you had to get it in the underlying part of the message. It was fucking there, though. She had to make some choices, and she had to make the right choices. And thankfully, she had some help. Paranorman, he did have help, too, in terms of the ghost and everything. So everything was just a little too friendly. I really feel like this film could have been darker than it was. However, it's fun. It's lighthearted. It's good. I think this is a great introductory film for kids into the horror genre. Little kids. I would show a fucking 3-year-old this. That's me.
I agree with what you're saying, but you actually proved the reason why this is a 4 versus, like anything higher, because the message is basically very blatant. Mm-hmm. I think the movies are better whenever you have to work a little bit to get the, a little bit of the message from them as opposed to being outright told by a character in the movie.
Yes, I agree. And that's what I'm getting at.
The the first thing that comes to mind is that movie, Don't Be a Menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood.
Yeah.
Because there are literal scenes where I think it's, was it Keenan Ivory Wayans is like in the background and he pops up and he's like, message, you know, like message. He deliberately tells you.
I forgot about that. No, and that's what I was getting at. I was trying to show why this is a four and not higher, because of the reasons that I had mentioned. And like I said, he had a lot of help, and that makes it less scary. You know that there's people he can turn to. You know that there's ghosts. Eventually you find out he can talk to the zombies if he wants to, you know, to get assistance, where Coraline didn't really have that. And if you go into the lore and deep dive on Coraline, you kind of find out that you don't know that the help that she had actually helped her. She actually might be forever in this cycle of whatever's happening in that world. So, and that's something dark that I discussed.
There's pretty big hints that she never got out of the fairy world.
Absolutely.
In that movie.
Absolutely. So, and you don't feel that way with Paranorman.
No, I mean, it's a pretty clear, like, you know, kids movie when it comes to that. Not only that, but, like, I really feel like the music sets this, or Coraline, you know, above, and it's not, we're not comparing, if you just look at this movie, though, the music's not memorable enough of Little Ghost or whatever at the end of it, that you can sit there and, like we said, say anything about it. It's just like, if you give me any song out of Nightmare Before Christmas, like I get that prison thing that we talked about way long time ago, where you get the chills up your spine. I love the music in that movie so fucking much. And I implore anybody that loves that movie, if you can go watch that at like some kind of a place where they have an actual live orchestra playing the music while you're watching the movie, amazing. That's fucking amazing to hear the music played by a live orchestra. I did that in Knoxville, Tennessee. Or no, it's in Nashville. It's in Nashville is where we went to. Man, it was so good.
I want fucking to see great. That. I heard that was coming out to my area. I just know that we're not going to get Tim Burton or fucking Danny Elfman or any of the other main characters. Obviously, we're not getting Ken Page, rest in peace. You know?
Oh yeah. You don't get the singing. You just get the music. Okay. But just hearing the music like makes the song so much better. Cause there's things you do not hear when you're watching that movie until you like the little like ancillary like instruments that are being used in the orchestra, and it makes the music so much better.
Maybe I need to take Tiny Lucifina to go see that. I think that's got to be like a mom-daughter date or whatever. I mean, I think the hubby might like it too, but yeah, that seems like something right up my alley.
But, I mean, when you factor in all that stuff, this movie cannot possibly get a 5 just because it's missing some of the key factors that really sets, like, a kid's scary, quote, movie, you know, apart from the rest of them.
I just don't know how you're going to come out with a ball buster like Coraline out the gate and, like, this is fucking horrifying, and then be like, hey, but we're going to make this friendly family. Coraline could have been family friendly, in a sense, for morbid families, if you will. But how are you going to come out with that horror film and then come out with this? This had so much more potential to be horrific and still be fun at the end of the day, because even Coraline kind of, it appears that it's okay. We don't know that it's okay. I want that same kind of dread with this film, because I love this film so much. A 4 is great. Like, don't come at me for this one, but I think
you know we covered 2 children's movies or you know type films, family films during ghost season that have more threat than this movie.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Sleepy Hollow. Yes. Sleepy Hollow from Disney of all places, and Garfield's Halloween special.
Yes. Scooby-Doo,
both
Zombie
of them
Island.
More threat in them.
We did that one that had a little bit more threat than this one.
Oh, yeah, it definitely had more threat than this.
Yeah, so you can make these films for kids. As a parent, you can use your own discretion to be like, okay, you can go on to what's, you know, the rating or does the dog die or whatever the hell. There's all kinds of different things and find out if this movie is appropriate for your kid. If you're going to be a pussy and don't want to introduce your kids to scary kids movies, don't take them to Coraline. But if you want to introduce them but you want it to be friendly, start with Paranorman. Maybe Nightmare Before Christmas. If you're scared of Nightmare Before Christmas, get the fuck out of Horror Town because you don't belong here. We don't like you.
Get the fuck out. Go back and watch, what is it, Halloween Town or whatever on Disney, which is about the same equivalent as far as being, you know, not scary or whatever.
Oh, my God. Anyways.
And we just lost a ton of fans.
They know what we're here for. They know what they're listening for. They're listening for the horror.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say about before we close this one out?
No, I really like this movie a lot. Despite the not perfect score, this is a great film. It's one of my favorites, and this is a rewatch over and over and over and over. Even if I have to take a nap, I want to watch it.
Same. So with that, folks, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.